It's time for Twig this weekend. Google Jeff Jarvis joins us. Aaron Newcomb too. Aaron's got some cool projects, including a 20-sided die that talks to you for you adventurers. And we'll talk about the latest Google news too. It's all coming up. Moot? Yeah, moot. It's all coming up next on This Week in Google.
Netcasts you love
from people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly, CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 343, recorded Wednesday, March 9th, 2016. Hold the grilled cheese. This Week in Google is brought to you by Atlassian. Unleash your team's potential with collaborative software tools like HipChat and Jira that'll enable you to work and communicate better together. Visit Atlassian.com to learn more. And by Gazelle, the online marketplace for buying and selling used gadgets. Shop from a variety of certified pre-owned electronics or trade one in for cash. Give new life to a used device at Gazelle.com today. And by NatureBox. NatureBox is dedicated to making smart, delicious snacking easy. They have over 100 ridiculously delicious snacks that get delivered directly to your doorstep. Visit naturebox.com/twit to get 50% off your first box now. It's time for Twig!
This Week in Google.
The show where we talk about the latest Google-iciousness, Facebook-iciousness, and Twitter-iciousness. Jeff Jarvis is here. From the City University of New York, where he teaches in the journalism program there. He's also an author of many wonderful books, including Geeks Bearing News and Public Parts, blogs at BuzzMachine.com. Hello, Jeffrey.
Hello, hello, hello. Sorry I missed you last week. I was flying.
We missed you so much, but it was a fun show. It's not This Week in Google without Jeff Jarvis.
Well, shucks.
By the way, I'm going to be in New York in 2 weeks, and I'm hoping we can do the show from CUNY.
It should be a lot of fun.
As soon as the dean gives us a go-ahead.
All the technicians who need to actually do the work, I just emailed all of them.
And we can help defray the costs, maybe.
Much excitement.
Yeah, if it costs
anything. That should be okay.
Yeah.
They're excited.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah.
Also with us, Aaron Newcomb. Great to see you again from NetApp. And, of course, a regular on Floss Weekly and All About Android.
Yep. Glad to be here.
He brought some projects, as he always does.
Yes.
You never stop.
No, I don't. And this is why things never get documented. People are always asking me after the show, where's the Instructable? Where's this? Where's that? And I'm like, you don't understand. I've moved on to three other things.
I kind of like that.
So you got to just get it done. Get it done.
Big news just at press time, as they say.
Ricky news.
What do they do? They call down to the, they stop the presses. We've got to rack it up and lay the page. What is it they say?
I only got to yell stop the presses once in my career.
Really?
Did I tell that story?
No.
So on the San Francisco Examiner, Sunday edition, there were two pictures. One was of the California Condor. One was of the Pope. The captions got switched. So under the Pope, it said, soon to be an endangered species.
Stop the presses!
That's
stop
awesome. Presses. What a great story.
And how come you got to do that? Were you a...
I was the Sunday editor.
Editor pro tem? Oh, I didn't know that. You edited the Sunday paper?
Yeah, yeah. Oh. So we had the Sunday news. And so they chipped off the caption, literally, so they got the presses back on.
Wow. You mean like with a chisel?
Basically, yeah.
They were still using hot lead?
No. You had plates.
Plates were
metal that stood up, so you just tamped the metal down, and that was aluminum.
Wow, that's kind of cool.
That's really cool.
So there was no caption.
I have old plates. Let me see if you can see this.
Oh, I'd love to see this.
See that coffee table back there?
That's made of plates?
That's two newspaper plates.
No.
Very heavy.
That's cool.
Lead that thick.
Yeah.
That's then they switched to aluminum.
Wow, that's really cool.
Newspaper geekdom.
Yeah.
You saw the very sad... post in was it Bill Moyer's blog about
he didn't write it but
about all the journos
who are gone, you know, out of, and most of them, because as these newspapers close and they're folding right and left, most of them are middle-aged and they're just not getting another job. What happens? It's a Dale Maharidge's article. What happens to journalists when no one wants to print their words anymore? Mm. And most of them are, you know, ending up doing something else, PR, or if they're lucky, PR. They're not so lucky working on a hot dog cart.
Wow, look at that sad picture, too.
It was on a paper folded.
Rocky Mountain News, February 27, 2009. 150-year-old daily paper shut down. 200 staffers lost their jobs. That is a very...
Boy, did I hijack us into the unhappy past. Sorry.
It's not the past. That's the sad thing. It's the present.
Yeah.
Papers are closing right and left, and there's not a lot of places for these talented journalists to go, is there? What do you tell your kids when you read an article like this? You're teaching kids to be journalists.
Oh, they're 90% of them get employed within 6 months because they do the news stuff. They're doing entrepreneurial journalism, social journalism, and they're using all the new tools, and they're going to new places like Vox and BuzzFeed and Fusion and Quartz and those kinds of places.
We've
too.
Seen, of course, this is the story of technology and of the internet in particular, is that businesses change and fail and rejigger themselves. And this, I'm sure the similar scenes played out at Kodak and, you know. This one really, I don't know, for some reason, it's really affected me. But you know, it's happening everywhere. It's happening at Disney. Good friend laid off at Disney because Disney decided to replace all of their engineers with H-1B visa people they've imported that were cheaper.
Mm.
And the sad thing is they were kept on for 6 months to train their replacement.
Right.
If they want the severance, you got to stick around and train your replacement. Yes. That is horrible.
That's not supposed to work that way, by the way.
Oh, is that against the law or something?
Yeah. You have to have a need. You have to say, we can't fill this position with another guy.
Yeah.
So we're going to apply for the visa and then you get it. But you have to prove that you looked and you couldn't find the guy that you or girl that you needed. And then you can get the visa. But it's definitely not supposed to be a wholesale replacement
the
method.
The story is, of course, that Disney doesn't do it themselves. They hire companies that do this. And, of course, there are many lawsuits. Here's an article from last month in the Times. Lawsuits claim Disney colluded to replace U.S. workers with immigrants. But Keith Barrett, who's a good friend of the show's and comes by all the time, he was very proud that he worked at Disney. He was an IT guy, but he and 250 others of his colleagues fired and replaced because what they did, what Disney does is, as many companies do, they go to a consultant company that hires foreign workers on H-1B visas to displace them. And so Disney's just outsourcing its IT. It's not Disney's fault, they say. It's very sad. And the other sad thing is, in this, and it talks about this in the article, is that many of these displaced workers applied for other jobs at Disney. In this case, one of the women who was training her replacement applied for 150 other jobs at Disney and did not get one.
Wow.
Seems like they should have had some priority, but apparently not. So there's a big lawsuit going on. Anyway, yeah, that's the downer. Let's talk about something happy.
Yeah.
Fee, fi, fo, fum. I smell the blood of a newspaper bun.
It's just, but this is what happens. This is the kind of displacement that when, but I think it's important for us as we celebrate technology and celebrate the internet and the new economy that we understand that there's a very human cost to this.
Mm-hmm.
All the more important for companies and even individual professionals to invest in their own future as best they can.
Yeah.
And be aware of what's happening. It's you know, there's a reality to deal with.
Yep.
And I don't mean to sound cold-hearted. I'm not, but it's...
Well, it is the reality.
Does it does no good to ignore the reality.
And if you're a young person coming up, it does a lot of good to think about what you're choosing. We did a great interview on Triangulation about a month ago about the professions, because I think it's always been thought, well, if you're a doctor, a lawyer, an accountant, you're not at risk, and of course they are also at risk, but in a different way. The jobs aren't disappearing, but they're changing significantly. But when what does expertise mean in an era where you've got Watson?
Speaking of which, did you see the Google Go computer won its first game yesterday?
Oh, I didn't see that they won.
We
That's
should be
awesome.
Watching.
This is about the most boring video ever created, though. It's an exciting moment, but the video is stultified.
Well, it's a slow game. And I love Go. I play chess. And, of course, we've seen this happen years ago. We saw this happen with chess. But it was always thought, well, chess is one thing, but Go goes hard.
The difference, right, is that you can calculate every possible move at every move in chess, and you can't with Go.
Right.
Is that the difference?
You could. It's just a much more complicated computationally. And so there are many, 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 many more options in Go. So, you know, but presumably at some point you can make a machine with enough RAM and enough processor power to do the calculations. In this case, AlphaGo, which is the program Google developed, didn't, in fact, look at all the moves. It used intuition, a.k.a.
Intuition?
It used previous experience.
Previous experience, because they had this thing playing itself.
Right. Many thousands of games.
Yeah.
And, of course, computers have beaten good amateur players, but this was Lee Sedol, who was one of the top professional Go players.
He's not. He's the explainer, I think.
Not that guy.
Yeah, the little screen.
Yeah. Lee is a 9-dan Go player, which, if you know Go, is very good. I mean, Grandmaster plus. It's a $1 million prize, a 5-game match. So I think, I don't know if game two is today, but yesterday on game one, he was beaten. He said, "I was very surprised. I didn't expect to lose. I didn't think AlphaGo would play the game in such a perfect manner."
Mm. Wow.
What's interesting is AlphaGo made a bad move early on. And Go, more than chess maybe even, is a game of emotions and intimidation. And normally if a player, a human, makes such a bad move early on, he gets demoralized and he's easier to beat. Mm. And Lee said that didn't faze the computer. It just kept on playing.
Right.
And in fact, played a game, a move towards the end of the game. Lee said, "I never thought it was even possible. Such an unexpected game, move that," he said, I would never have foreseen this. This is the 19x19 board that they play on. One player's black, obviously, one player's white. The idea is to occupy territory by surrounding the other player's pieces. It's a beautiful game and a simple game. Why does it keep doing that? What is that?
They hadn't started yet or something. I don't know. Just fast forward.
Well, they're thinking. Lee's thinking right now.
Oh, that's it. No, I'm sorry. Right. Oh, you're almost
there. I'm captivated.
No, not at the end. You'll see. You'll be at the end when you have all the pieces or many of the pieces. The board will be full. Yeah, there you go. So what you're trying to do is occupy territory. And the game ends when there's no more to occupy. So a human, obviously, is moving the piece for AlphaGo. "I don't regret accepting this challenge," said Lee. "I am in shock. I admit that. But what's done is done. I enjoy this game and look forward to the next. I think I failed in the opening layout. So if I do better on the opening aspect, I think I'll be able to increase my probability of winning."
Yeah, one game is not.
No. Well, it is and it isn't.
Eminence.
The fact that a computer could beat a 9-dan player in any game at any time is phenomenal. So today, Saturday, Sunday, and Tuesday, at 11 p.m. Eastern, the night before. So tonight, I think, at 11 p.m. Eastern or 8 p.m. Pacific. Huge. And if it wins the match, then it's even huger, to coin a phrase.
Huger.
It's huger.
So this, what is it, Fan Hui? Is a European champion, so I'm assuming he...
That was the last one. And
oh, that's
he
the last
is not
one.
A professional. He was just a very good amateur.
Oh, okay.
Lee is 9-dan, which is as good as it gets. This is... this is big.
But
this is equivalent... It's not like beating the world champion. I don't even know if there is a world... There must be a world champion.
I think there is. I mean, they said on the radio yesterday this guy was... If you had to rank it, you know, like you
He's
do
like
normal
eight
stuff...
or something.
Four.
Four?
They said four.
Wow.
Four in the world. But my I'm just wondering, having studied a little bit of Asian culture, whether this is how demoralizing this is. I mean, this is not you can't say
it was
face
a big
here.
Deal in chess. I was a very serious chess player and tournament player, and it was a big deal in chess when Deep Thought, IBM's Deep Blue, computer beat the world champion. It was initially the demoralizing. Yeah. It was like, stop playing the game, demoralizing. Right. Like, what's the point? And then humans got over it and, in fact, play better and harder than ever before. And now they use computers very heavily in preparation.
Yeah, training.
You're not obviously allowed to use during the game, but in training, it's really a big deal. So
the match is tonight.
Yeah, 11 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Yeah. Eastern.
Yeah.
In some ways, I'm still more impressed by Jeopardy just because, A, I'm stupid about this stuff, but, B, the
Jeopardy's hard in some ways, too. Yeah.
Well, the linguistic layer is what's interesting.
Yeah, this is kind of a classic computer problem, like chess is. Chess is solvable. Chess, you can, you know, there are a almost infinite number of positions, but computers are able to calculate so deeply that they can pretty much make the perfect move every time if you apply enough power to it. Go is 19 by 19. There are many, many more possibilities. It's a very deep game, very difficult game. Although I always thought Go would be not so difficult to crack because it's pattern focused, and computers are good at pattern matching, but not as good as humans. Humans are the kings. So this would be for a long time thought to be insolvable. Like no, like this isn't going to happen. No computer, but that's we know that that's not. So add to journalists and Disney IT, add Go Masters. You're out. Get a new gig. I'm sorry, that was mean. Hey, when we come back, there's some the breaking news that I said we would talk about. We're going to talk about that.
Now we're going to talk about it.
But when I come back. Yeah, I don't know if Go's older than chess. I think I'm pretty sure it's a lot older than chess.
It must be, yeah.
It's a very simple game. It's a beautiful game. And as serious as I was about playing chess, I always found Go extremely challenging because, you know, there's not different kinds of pieces. There's one kind of piece, and it's all about
strategy, right?
Well, so is chess. It's just hard. It's a very hard game. Really amazing. I should point out, though, that there's still calculation. It's about calculation. This is something computers are good at. Probably you're right, Jeff. In some ways, playing Jeopardy well is harder. And in fact, I think there were a lot of caveats in Watson's win in Jeopardy, right? Like, they helped it out a lot. Chris, I said the same thing about the chess, about the Deep Blue. Our show today is brought to you by Atlassian. I don't know. If you're a programmer, I don't have to say anything more. You know Atlassian. Behind every great human achievement is a team. Mapping the genome, 3D printing, space exploration, renewable energy, or planning your next offsite. Team. How do you bring everyone together to build what's next with Atlassian? We've used Atlassian in many ways. We used Jira when we were designing our website. We used HipChat. We still use HipChat all the time to meet. We have about 8 or 9 HipChat channels. What's neat about HipChat is it supports, of course, lots of integrations. And we had installed a little bot that tells us now when services are down. In fact, we told one of our partners that their service was down for 10 minutes last night. They said, oh, we didn't know. We actually said, you should be running HipChat in Atlassian. You can assign, track, and manage tasks for any project with Jira. That's what we used for the website. It was really great. You can create and share content, organize results, bring team members up to speed with Confluence. You can get instant messages or video chat with your team from any device with HipChat. You can test, review, and manage code in real time. That's Bitbucket. Atlassian is the king of this stuff. It's helping teams in every industry from startup to enterprise make great ideas real. Go to Atlassian, Atlassian.com to learn more and see how Jira, Confluence, HipChat, Bitbucket give your team everything you need to organize, discuss. We love it. Atlassian.com. Unleash the potential in your team and build what's next. So about an hour ago, this was a shocking announcement. The Android beta of N became available not just for developers, but for anybody using a Nexus device. So if you have a Nexus 6, a Nexus 9 tablet, a 5X, a 6P, a Nexus player, or, and this is an interesting one, the Pixel C. I know you do, Jeff. I do, too. It's time to put N on. Is N Nutella? What did he say? What did Hiroshi
he said,
say?
We're not saying.
We're not saying. I thought
I'm
nougat.
Downloading right now.
I thought nougat would be a good one. Oh, nice. You're a brave man. That's on your Nexus 6.
That's on my Nexus 6, my big old Nexus 6.
Is this the one you're moving to Fi?
It's already on Fi.
Oh, nice.
As we speak.
For now.
Happen. Wow.
Hey.
Well, so the big change, besides the fact that it's not just for developers, is it's an over-the-air update.
That is key.
That's huge.
Yes.
And easy.
You just
click, done.
Yeah, so you go to google.com/android/beta. And then if you go with logged into your account, you'll see which devices you have that are eligible. You see, I can, and then you have to enroll that device in the beta. So I'm definitely going to do the Pixel. Because one of the things that's cool about this is split screen, which the Pixel really could use.
Yep.
That would make it that might by itself make the Pixel be the device, right? Yep.
And anytime you're using Android in a desktop fashion,
right?
Like I've done with this little thing here,
right?
You miss the windowing. You absolutely miss the windowing. So side by side is going to be great,
right?
Yeah,
I'll do it on my Pixel. You're doing it on your 6. So this must have been your experience. So I said enroll. It says device enroll. System update will soon be offered. So you got that right away.
Then it comes right away, and boom, you're done.
Wow. You could check to see if an update is pending by.
Well, I mean, it's downloading. It's still downloading. It's 850 megs.
It's not that big.
It's not giving me any progress bar, so I'm a little worried.
850 meg? Eh.
That's small. Why is that so small?
No, that's about right.
Is it?
Yeah. That's about.
But it's still sitting there.
All right. So questions, answers. Hiroshi Lockheimer, who's the head of the Android team, wrote a Medium post, not a Google Plus post. Sorry, kids.
Yeah.
Another nail in the coffin.
Well, we'll be getting to that later.
And, yeah, actually, there's some interesting... There's Google Plus news. N as in not so early, it's not named yet. A lot of people thinking Nutella, but that's a commercial name. I think Nougat.
Well, they've done it before.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Nut roll.
That's not a dessert. That's a thing.
Yeah, it is.
What is a nut roll?
Well, they've had candy bars.
Somebody says Nestle Road. I don't even know what a Nestle Road is.
Nougat.
I think nougat.
Yeah.
I like nougat. He said, what did he say? It's nut ready yet?
It's the last line. I'll read the last line.
All right. Going all the way down to the end, he says, so the burning question that's on everyone's mind, what will the N release be named? We're not telling you yet. That's the top highlight, by the
way. That's good.
So this is big. I'm just stunned. This presumably, timing-wise, would be Google I.O. would be, here's what's new in N.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So to do this now.
Yeah.
So you got all these developers in the room who have N.
Who have it.
They will start playing with it. Does that take the wind out of the sails, or does
no,
that make that
no.
makes I.O. yet more
yeah,
developer?
Means they mean maybe they'll ship it at I.O.
Right, right. And maybe. They must feel very confident about it to roll it out this way.
What are the features that we know?
By the way, this is the earliest preview yet, according to Hiroshi. You'll be able to act on the feedback while still being able to hand off the final end release to device makers this summer, so they can get their hands on it. So for fall. Like in your new
yeah, so
your phone.
They won't release it at I/O then.
No, let me see. I'm not sure what's new.
There's multi windows, which is the one we already talked about. There's also direct reply notifications.
Direct reply. Oh, so when you get a notification, you can. Yeah. But a lot of the third party manufacturers, the OEMs have been doing
the
that.
Third party apps. There's also bundling notifications.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
So you got 23 notifications.
Right. It just doesn't show up in a big list. Yeah. It's like right there.
Oh, yay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
You'll get an update every 4 to 6 weeks until the public launch of N. You could take as long as 24 hours to get. So here's the timeline. Yeah, they say preview updates March, April, May, June, July, and the final release in Q3. So they have a pretty clear
roadmap of this.
And I think the rationale here is they're going to get a hell of a lot more feedback on it
That's great.
That's wonderful.
But as you said, they also must feel very confident.
Yeah. Yeah, because this isn't a limited rollout to certain developers, right?
They just Half the world's going to do this, right?
Who would, we'll play. Yeah.
If you've got a Nexus phone, this is why, you know what? This is a big selling point for a Nexus phone. You know, I was switching over to my new Galaxy S7, and then I thought, well, maybe I, hold on there. maybe I should go back.
Didn't they give a discount on the on the Nexus, was it 5?
Yeah, all Christmas they were saving
because,
$50.
Well, no, now I think it would be because of 5.
$150
because of 5.
Because of 5. Yes,
off.
No more, you off. Don't need a invitation anymore. If you buy a phone, they'll say, oh, you want to put 5 on this?
Right. And it comes delivered with 5, right?
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that the Nexus player is getting this, too.
Yeah, that's a little weird, isn't
because
it?
Because why would you want any of you notifications? Don't care on a Nexus player. So those two features are out. Split screen, probably don't care because you got the lean back experience. That may not even work on the. So I'm curious why. What is in there that's going to help Nexus Player out? I moved off the default operating system for Nexus Player, and I'm using a somebody else's mod because it's so much better just to run stock Android. But I don't know. Maybe I'll go back. Maybe I'll back it up and try this because I'm curious what could there possibly be?
Up to $150 off when you buy a Nexus 5X and activate. Although the 6P is really the phone that you want. Is there a deal on the 6P? I think.
I haven't seen it.
It's a little big. Maybe people don't want as big of a screen. So Dieter Bohn has been playing with N over there at The Verge. He said, we just finished flashing the preview just to kick the tires, peek under the hood. Everything is zipping around the screen much faster than we're used to. Animation speeds radically sped up, but there also seems to be a very high level of care dedicated to the movement of basic OS elements. How does split-screen multitasking work? Pretty well. You operate it by holding down your finger on the top of a window in the main multitasking view and dragging it up to a highlighted area. Once you do, the other half gives you a second view to pick another app. Kind of how Samsung works. Samsung, you go into Recents, and if you can't, if the app supports split window, it'll have a special icon which you tap. Once there, you can adjust the splitter up or down in portrait mode or left and right in landscape. And this worked with third-party apps like Twitter that weren't built for it. Interesting. Although Android has, of late, really been focusing on screen resolution independence, right? That's kind of built in.
Yeah. By the way, chat room's saying picture-in-picture for Nexus Player. So that makes a lot of sense.
Ah.
Picture-in-picture. That's the two windows. Got it.
And especially if that goes out to the TV manufacturers as well. It makes a lot of sense.
Right.
If it's built into your TV, you got, you know, SportsCenter up here, and then you're watching The Martian or something.
Dieter says some crashes here and there when we were messing around, but overall it's much more solid than you'd expect for an early preview. But that's important to know if you're thinking of putting it on your main device, as you just did, Jeff.
No, I'm not. I put it on my Nexus 6.
Oh, okay.
6P.
Oh, good.
No. I'm not. Okay. No.
I'm not crazy.
No, you know me. I'll come whining to you.
Yeah, working. Quick settings have changed. There's a short row of icons at the top of the notification shade. Well, that's always been there. Hitting one of those buttons will directly toggle Wi-Fi or Bluetooth or whatever. But pull it down farther, you can change what appears in quick settings. And
is there a app drawer?
Right. Yeah. People were rumor was
of course there's an app drawer. Of course, well, I haven't seen that.
Sure. I'm just halfway through downloading. I finally found the status bar.
Main settings also refreshed. Each line shows more information now. There's a suggested area for settings that Android thinks you'll want to pay attention to. Notifications, much more information dense, almost to the point of distraction, says Dieter Bohn. It does mean you can get a lot more done in there. That's the quick reply feature. And other nice bits and bobs. For example,
what about Google Now?
It doesn't say anything.
Used Now on Tap hardly at all. I hardly ever do it.
Yeah.
Never think to it.
I don't know if that's because Now on Tap isn't that useful or just because it's whenever you have a new interface feature like that, it's you got to kind of remember it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the problem.
Wow, big news. So if you have one of the...
there's an app drawer.
Yeah, of course there's an app drawer.
That was a non-starter to begin with.
That was a marketing image that somebody.
Yeah, it was badly done. Yep. Forgot the Aptor.
But they must giggle there. Oh, we put a panic through the game world.
And also, if you didn't like that, you just use one of the third-party launchers, of which there are many, and they'll have an Aptor.
Yeah.
I can't imagine them doing that. So it would be nutty to do that.
Or it could be an option, right?
Yeah.
Could be an option in the settings. You want Aptor or not.
Wow. All right. Exciting news.
Whenever it goes, I'll...
I want to run home and get my Pixel C. Of all days... You know, I normally have the 6P with me, but of course now I'm doing the Galaxy. And by the way, I still love this, but a word of warning, if you buy the Galaxy S7, it's slippery. It's like a little fish in your hands, and I've already cracked it twice now.
Jeez.
Which I have never done. I haven't cracked a phone in years, but it hit on the sidewalk, and you see that? This back, which is heavily shellacked, I guess, cracks very easily. And so there's a nice big crack.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like a mirror. And I have another crack down here, a scrape or something. I don't know.
Better the back than the front.
Well, the funny thing is, of course, I ordered a case. Although this is a phone you'd love to keep out of the case. It's so pretty. But, of course, I ordered a case. But because I got the phone so much earlier than the normal, the case is going to come Friday, a little too late. But, yeah, I'll just put it in a case and I won't know.
Last night on All About Android, Flo talked about how her...
Hers was cracked,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, on the front by the home button.
Her screen was scratched.
Yeah.
So this is a very fragile phone. I love it. It's still my favorite Android phone I've ever used. The camera is mind-boggling. I've seen some of the reviewers. All the reviews came out yesterday. I see some of the reviewers say, oh, it's as good as an iPhone. No, it's like 10 times better than an iPhone.
You heard it here.
Not even close. Yeah, some people found negatives that I just did not agree with. So... And yes, of course, the iFixit folks tore it down and said, this is unrepairable. They gave it a 3 out of 10, which I thought was generous. They said, we don't see how you could replace a cracked screen. It's all glued and it's just not. They said repairs will break it. So
I saw a teardown that went through how they water resisted it.
Yeah, that was cool, wasn't it?
Yeah, did you see that?
Yeah.
They talked about all the gaskets they put around the power button and the USB and all that kind of stuff and where all of the features were. Oh, my goodness. Look at that. We are ready to go.
Oh, yeah. Amazing. Jason. Amazing. Jason's a kitten on the keys.
Yep.
He
you can
so
see
fast.
The water test strip there.
There's three color. Of them in there. There's three water test strips. And the phone, we now know... If the charger port is moist, we'll say,
yep.
It's wet in there. Don't plug it in.
Which is good.
Yeah, it's just what you want.
But it's kind of surprising how little you need to do, right, to get that water resistance.
Why didn't they do that before?
I mean, water doesn't want to go in there by nature anyway, so you just need a little bit of...
Seal that sucker. Well, I know that was a big deal, and like people were really upset that the S6 didn't have waterproofing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What are people dropping in the toilet a lot? Is that what's going on?
Yeah.
I have, I'm pretty good with my phones. I rarely break or drop them. This was a little bit sad. And it was only because this is so slippery. I mean, I would not have dropped
it. So what were you doing when you dropped it?
I thought I'd put it in my pocket. Either it didn't go in all the way or something, because I wasn't bending over or anything. I just got in the car and I heard clatter, clatter, clatter. And then I looked and I couldn't see it and I thought, oh, God. And it was out in the street.
Jeez.
I snagged it before a car ran over it.
Oh, wow.
But it had hit this corner, and it shattered the glass. It's like glass. It had shattered the whatever this is a little shattered, and then there's a crack across. You can feel it. It's rough there.
Mm.
But a case will cover that up. And you know what? You need a case on this, because this edge, you hit it all the time. Every time I give my phone to Lisa to show or something, it launches a different program because you can barely hold this thing without tapping the screen somehow. Because the screen is all the way around, which makes it beautiful. It's one of these, it's an interesting, it's form over function where it's just, it's really about how, I mean, it's a gorgeous phone. But the case that I got from Casemate will go over around it, cover it up, protect it. And I wish I had it. It's a sign of old age, says Hobie in the chat room. Yeah, you start dropping things.
Then you forget where they are.
I don't, where did I leave my phone? Where did I leave my pants?
That's what I feel like. I got a cortisone shot in my finger.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. Kind of like a little spacey? So
look at that. Look at what they did to me.
Wow. What'd they do that for? Well, he's all bruised on his webbing. They hit a vein, a vessel.
And it's all numb. I can't type either. So if I'm a little slow, it's not my fault.
And why don't they give you cortisone and you have tennis elbow?
Trigger finger. That's what they're saying.
Trigger finger. Yeah. You shooting too much?
No, I'm working in the shop too much. I'm working in the makerspace too much. And so my finger will.
Wow.
It catches.
Oh, I've had that. Yeah.
It's hell getting old. Man.
He's not even old. That's the sad thing. Yeah. He's a young man.
A little preview for you, man.
They say it's more common in people with diabetes, and I'm a type 1 diabetic. So
oh, there you go. Sure.
Why it is. So I've gotten out. I'm not getting old. I got diabetes.
I'm getting old and I have diabetes.
I got the diabetes.
I got type 2 now. The diabetes.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Really?
So I'm really trying to cure myself by eating better and losing weight. I lost 30 pounds.
Good for you.
Working hard to
good for you.
Get back to normal. Because now the doctor said it's a cascade.
Yes.
They kept giving you other drugs. Now he says, well, we really should put you on statins. I said, yep. No, I don't want to be on statins.
Me neither. I say that every time. They tell me every time. I'm like, no way.
No. So he says, well, Agus. If you can bring your LDL down, you don't have to.
David Agus, you know, doctor to the stars. Doctor.
He's the guy says everybody should be on statins.
He says, it's because of him. He personally said to me, well, I have all these things that are about inflammation. And he said, why the hell aren't you on it? It's about inflammation. Take them. And I am.
Really? And you don't have bad side effects?
No.
He wrote a book. He was a Steve Jobs doctor, although that's not really a good recommendation.
Well, no, he's the guy who tried to fix things.
Yeah, it was a little late, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
He wrote a book called The End of Illness, which I own. And it turns out the whole book is take statins.
And don't take vitamins.
And don't take vitamins. Mm. So what am I doing? Taking a lot of vitamins and no statins.
Yeah.
David, who also advised me personally on my prostate situation, is the
wow. You got a good doctor, dude.
He's well. That's the whole. I'm very grateful. He's the world's nicest guy. I see him at Davos every year. And
isn't he Obama's? So he also, doesn't he do Obama too?
He does a lot of people, and he also did Robin Quivers.
And Will I Am. Oh, Robin Quivers had cancer. And
she had a huge, really bad, bad thing. And Howard Stern got a hold of David and said, please help. My dear friend is dying. And he advised her. And he's an amazing doctor. He's just a great guy. But anyway, yeah, he says take statins.
And don't take vitamins.
Yeah, I don't remember what the full rationale is of the vitamins. I stopped because of him, but I can't remember what the rationale was. I think it's numbers. It's all data with him.
Yeah. Well, data also says you shouldn't eat every other day. You know that, right? That's the newest thing, is fast every other day.
No.
I do intermittent.
Well, he argues strenuously that you have to be on a regular schedule of food.
Oh, see, nobody. I'm this not. Is why we don't know what to do, because nobody agrees. Right, Dr. Mom? People on a healthy diet don't need vitamins, she says. Well, I'm on a healthy diet. I don't mind expensive urine. I feel like that's I've earned that right.
This week in your health.
What were we talking about before we got on that?
Being old.
Can we rewind?
Yeah, no,
I was going to talk.
I was going to talk about the Google Doodle.
It was young Aaron and his finger.
And his finger.
I'm sorry.
Fickle finger of fate.
So, have you seen the Google Doodle today? It's awesome.
I couldn't get it to work.
It's maybe the anniversary of the theremin or something. I don't know. So you get theremin lessons.
Oh, nice.
She says, please repeat after me. And then you do it. Lesson two. Now she's going to do a little more. By the way, you have to apparently go through this in the theremin lesson in order to play the theremin, which we'll be able to do as soon as I've done this on a different machine. I hope they save a cookie. So there I've done the three notes. And now there's one last. G, F sharp, B, E, D. So let's see if I can master the theremin. G, F sharp, B, E, D. And now she's going to play a little song for us. On the theremin inevitably sounds like a science fiction movie.
Yeah,
as always.
Who invented it? Was it Tesla that invented this? Who invented the theremin?
There's a graphic that comes up at the end to find out about her.
Oh, she's the famous theremin player. Not a great instrument.
Leon, of course, Leo. Leon Theremin.
Oh, the guy's name was Theremin.
Yes.
Yeah. Doit.
I know Moog used it a lot, right? He was in that before.
And that was Clara Rockmore.
Yeah.
Who does not rock, in fact. She inspired Led Zeppelin and the Rolling Stones, however, a pioneer in electronic music and a theremin master, and today is her 105th birthday. And if you want to hear
the geekiest doodle ever,
more of her music, it is, in fact, on Google Play. Here we go. The Clara Rockmore. She was a Lithuanian virtuoso of the theremin. What do you want to hear? A little Bach suite for orchestra?
Burke just pointed out the Star Trek theme.
Yeah.
Yep.
Now remember, this is before Moog.
Yep.
This is before Frippertronics.
This was done in the air between the two.
Yeah, so the way it works is your hand. I got to go back to the page because I hope it remembers that I had my lessons.
It doesn't.
Oh, man.
Oh, it doesn't? You got to do it again?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Son of a gun.
Why does it do that?
You know, maybe we should remember also George Martin, Sir George Martin, who passed away.
Yes, yes, that's true.
At the ripe old age of 90, of course, he was the fifth Beatle. He was the sixth Beatle because there was already a fifth.
Right. Exactly.
But really instrumental not only in signing the Beatles after everyone else had turned them down, but in helping craft them into the legends that they were. You know, if you want to hear some of his best work, go see the Love Show in Vegas, the Cirque du Soleil show. It's a Beatles show, but he and his son remixed all the old Beatles music and the tapes and stuff they had in the library to make it the music, and it's incredible. The Beatles and surround sound. Wow. We're wide ranging today.
Yeah,
we are.
Yeah, we're wandering all over the place.
I like a show that.
So how about Google Plus?
Okay.
Well, I'm eager to hear what you think about this.
So are you talking about the fact that Moot?
Yes.
Chris Poole, the founder of 4chan, has apparently taken a job at Google working under Bradley Horowitz, and it's not clear what he's doing, because Bradley is running, what is it called, Streams and Interests. But Moot, some say, I've seen tweets say he's working in the photos part of this, not the social network. Although, man, the guy who started 4chan would really be a good person to have working on a social network if you were.
And you know, think about I've met Moot at a Google event. Nicest, most unassuming guy you can imagine.
Oh, you can't blame him for Slash Beast.
Not at all. But people, I think, you know, so just a wonderful, wonderful guy. And very smart, obviously, and experienced at where things can go wrong, which is valuable experience, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you're doing a social network, I don't know about photos. Is he a programmer?
That's a good question.
What is his skill? He says, today in his blog, Chris hates writing. We know that's one thing that is not a skill. Today, I'm excited to announce I've joined Google. When meeting with current and former Googlers, I continually find myself drawn to their intelligence, passion, and enthusiasm, as well as a universal desire to share it with others. I'm also impressed by Google's commitment to enabling these same talented people to tackle some of the world's most interesting and important problems, yada, yada, yada. He does mention his own experience from a dozen years of building online communities. So, gosh, it'd be really cool if Google hadn't given up on Google Plus and said, who could we bring in to reinvent this?
Right.
What does the world need? What could Google Plus be?
I think an antidote to Twitter is a good start.
Mm-hmm.
So Twitter was not going away, and we need Twitter. But what's wrong with Twitter? Well, one's an anonymity, right? And as long as you have somewhere to do anonymity, you don't have to be in. And so I think the real names policy on Facebook and Google Plus is fine. So real names. And the other thing Twitter does very well is conversations, which is only really kind of a afterthought on Twitter.
Groups of people is what they pride themselves on.
Yeah, but boy, that was a flop, I think, because circles was a great idea.
All right, so the other one is interests. And the one thing that didn't work so terribly well was photography. Why did photography work well? Just because they had Trey Ratcliffe? Because there was functionality that made
they
it work?
The thing that Trey liked, I know because I've talked a lot with him about it,
yeah.
is how they displayed the images. They displayed them big. They didn't, unlike Facebook, they didn't squinch them down.
Mm-hmm.
But even Trey made sure that he posted not just on Google+.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He posted everywhere, including Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah, interests are really the key, I think. They tried to capitalize on that a little bit, but I don't think they did it well enough.
What brings you back to Google Plus?
For me, I can tell you it's that because I'm into technology and because most of the people on there are into technology, anytime I want to know anything about what's going on in Raspberry Pi or making something or
And
LEDs,
you follow those particular groups? Is that how that happens?
Or I just do a search.
Or you just do a
There's
search.
There's just a wealth of knowledge on it. Yeah. And I do follow those groups. So I follow Raspberry Pi. I follow Arduino. I follow people that I know that are makers that I want to see what they're doing. I do follow those things. And so when my feed comes up, it's full of stuff that's so interesting to me. I almost have to avoid it sometimes because I know as soon as I open it up, I don't go there as often as I used to. When I do, I'm going to get stuck there for a couple of hours because I'm going to be following up on all of these things. So for me, it still works really well.
So they should be less engaging.
Maybe. Yeah.
It is a good place if you want Google information, that kind of stuff.
That kind of stuff.
Geek stuff.
Geek stuff. It's great.
I have a board game group
that I follow because I like board games. Yeah. And just people love it for that.
Well, it's really the case with Facebook, too. The more you put into it, the better it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm getting a lot of spam. And for some reason, Google, that they surface popular posts, not from people you follow or circles of yours.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, the popular posts are all right-wing agitprop. They're not even like, just conservative. I don't mind a conservative post, but they're like a horrible. And I don't know why I keep getting those in my feed. Is there something I did? But that's a sure way to get you out of a site, right?
Yeah.
Is by forcing you to look at something bad.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is I've basically got about five people I know who are left posting there.
Yeah. Lauren Weinstein is 90% of the posts
great.
I see. And he's great.
Yeah,
but
he's great.
And Peter Vogel. There's just like a handful now are still posting there. Even Mike Elgin, I don't see as much.
No. So Twitter, let me go back to that for a second, if I may. I found the weirdest thing the last couple of days is suddenly I'm getting, last maybe 2 weeks actually, I start getting tagged in other people's conversations. So like I'll tweet something, somebody else will retweet it, and then five people get into a conversation, and in the next 5 days I'm getting their goddamn conversation until they untag me or they just get tired and move on. That's recent.
Really? You didn't used to get that?
Anything, not like this. Was there been any change in the UI in the last few weeks that would make that different? I can't figure out why suddenly it's happening. It's happening like crazy. And of course,
you're included as an at tag?
Yeah, I'm included as an at tag. So they reply. You end up with four people tagged in it. And it's always a canoe. It's a right-wing political thing.
Oh.
So maybe they're using
some harassing
client.
You.
No, it's not so much that. They just go back and forth and back and forth. Yes, he did. No, he didn't. Yes, he did. No, he didn't.
Yeah,
yes,
and you
did.
Don't want to be in that conversation because you don't want to see it. And how would you get rid of it? Only by muting those people, right?
Right. And I don't know whether there's some client that they use or that's popular in that world or what it is, but it's so weird.
Well, everybody just likes to bait you. That's why.
No, it's not. It's not aimed at me even. They're having their own conversation.
That's why you're in it, though.
I'm trapped in the elevator.
That doesn't sound like fun. Can you ignore a conversation or temporarily mute a conversation? That would be a nice feature. Now we're fixing Twitter again.
Yeah, well.
We tried to fix Google Plus and we switched to Twitter. That's the problem right there in a nutshell. I don't know. I'm
getting nostalgic for Google Plus. I haven't been in it in a while. I'm going back and it's pretty and it's nice and it's easy. I really liked it.
If there is a thread to my social network participation going back to 2006, it's that I always go to the place where threaded conversations flourish.
Because
to me, and by the way, nobody wants that. That's why Twitter has succeeded, and Jaiku, and BuzzFeed, and FriendFeed, and Google Plus seem to have all failed because it's the threaded conversation is like too much info. And that, and you know that Google knows that because in the most recent redesign, they kind of hide the thread, right? You only see one comment that you're rotating through. It's as if, there's no thread here. That's just the post. But to me, it's the comments, the threaded comments that are what make, that's why I liked message boards and forums.
Yeah. But I actually like the way they do it because it doesn't always, oh, this is interesting. It doesn't always.
He's sucked into his Google. Oh, wait a minute.
I'm just pulling apart a 7-segment in display last night. This is a 14-segment display. Anyway, that's why I love Google Plus. I actually like the way they do the comments because before I was feeling on the really popular, the Mike Elgin posts.
You'd get long.
Oh, my word. It was like you get buried in
it. No, this is an improvement.
So it's an improvement for me anyway. And if I'm really interested in the topic, I will go ahead and click on it and then scroll down.
You still know there's a threaded conversation there.
Yep.
Yeah, I think Google Plus did that pretty well, where the post is foremost. It's visual. That's one thing that they do very well. There's always images, and the images pop. They're big.
Yep.
They did that right. I don't know. Why did people abandon Google? Why did Google Plus not succeed? Circles, I would say. As good an idea as that was, nobody wants to do it.
Well, because people couldn't get their friends and family into it, basically, right? I mean, they couldn't get them off
network
Facebook.
Effect. They couldn't get the network effect.
Yeah, they just couldn't do it.
But this is not, I mean, this would not be as engaging as Facebook for most people.
Really?
Do you think?
It's way more engaging for me, but I'm not a people person. I don't.
That's the problem. It's a social network for people who hate people.
Well, yeah.
There you really go. Is. You nailed it.
There it really explains is. It all.
That's why you and I and Jeff like it.
From Google. Yeah.
The curmudgeons like it.
I mean, you were talking about getting the right-wing stuff on your Google Plus. I get way more on Facebook. And so, you know, I tend to tune it out and turn it off and not go to Facebook because I hate seeing it.
Yeah, but in that case, at least for me on Facebook, because I followed all, Cruz and Rubio and Trump, and I wanted to see those posts. Mm-hmm. And I don't mind those discussions. What I don't like to be forced, and this is what Google Plus, and you know what? It looks like they've stopped doing it. But you know the hot?
Oh, yeah.
The hot was always stuff I did not want to see.
Right. Right.
And I'd even say, why is this hot? It's got 3 comments and 2 likes. Yeah. Why are you surfacing this in my hot feed? You know what? I don't see them anymore. So,
I just saw one.
Hot on Google Plus. Think dragons are a myth? This tiny real life dragon is causing an uproar. See, I don't want to see that. I might be hot on Google Plus. I'm not following this person. I don't want to see this post.
But here's the paradox. The more people abandon it, the more they need to fill your feed with stuff like that.
This does have 521 pluses, so that's probably why it's in there. I don't know.
You would think that Google.
Here's another one trending on Google Plus: giant grizzly bear attacks workers in their trucks in terrifying video. It's exactly what I don't want to be in my Google Plus feed.
Right.
And by the way, this only has 33 pluses and 6 comments. Why is that trending? Conspiracy Club. I wouldn't follow Conspiracy Club.
Well, it's definitely not as terrifying as a dragon.
You're right. Even a little dragon.
I almost never do the hot thing. I almost never do
that. I can turn that off, right? Can I turn that off? Maybe I should turn that off.
I just go to my home.
How do you turn off hot? Well, I'm on home.
Oh, you're on home?
Yeah. Can't you? Used to be you could say, push a slider.
Oh, yeah. That was actually a good feature.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's gone.
See, we don't even know how it works anymore. You see, Google, you know they're listening. They're waiting for us to solve this problem.
They're on pins and needles.
We're not Google. I'm not solving a single problem for you until you solve the multiple sign-in problem. I'm holding any problem-solving hostage. Leo,
give that one up.
And Aaron and I, we know solutions to tons of problems, but we're not letting them out until you solve that.
That's right. Yeah, that's so annoying.
What we're asking is what Moot could bring to the table, if indeed Moot is working on Google Plus, what he could bring to the table and how he could take his vast knowledge of what makes us online communities work.
What were the startups he was working on? He was working on 2 that didn't work.
Well, there was some irony because even though he's so strongly associated with 4chan, 4chan lost money like never made any money.
Right.
No. And so he had to fund it with his own startups. And eventually
so started,
retired from
Canvas. DrawQuest.
Oh, Canvas wasn't that a Google acquisition?
It was in 2014.
Canvas was great.
Business.
Oh.
What did it do again?
It's DrawQuest. Went out of business in 2014. And there was another one, I think, that he did.
Given all the hoo-ha about identity and Google+, it'll be interesting to have someone who was so much around the notion of anonymity there.
You know, it wasn't until 2008 that anybody even knew who Moot was. The Wall Street Journal outed him.
Right.
Cute guy. He's not very old. Oh, okay. He's in his
20s. 27, 28.
Yeah.
Canvas Networks was a website centered on sharing and remixing media, particularly images. Ta-da. Yeah.
I was in Canvas. I used Canvas. I loved Canvas.
You've been in everything.
Canvas was cool. I didn't realize it went out of business. So that just shows you I hadn't used it in a while.
It had funding from Andreessen Horowitz, yeah. SB Angel, Lehrer Hippo, founder, and Joshua Schachter.
Good people. Schachter, of course, from Delicious.
And it was an image board that allows, this is all Wikipedia, that allows for anonymous and non-anonymous sharing and commenting on media,
yeah.
as well as the remixing of posted images and the adding of music to animated GIFs.
Interesting.
All right. So this becomes really interesting. If you try to take just a static photo thing in an age of GIFs and remixing, where photos still are, Google Photo is the killer.
Mm-hmm.
What if you really amped up Google Photo? With the ability to share things more and do things, more things to it. I mean, I'm speculating here.
I mean, it's reasonable to assume that Google realizes that the visual element is the reason that Google Plus had as much traction as it did.
Yep.
And we've just talked about that. And they extracted photos from it. So maybe putting some sort of visual element back in, or support for visual back in.
I just realized something. Hmm. You know, I was holding on to the fact that I was a Google Plus user for all that time, and I wouldn't switch over because of the damn two accounts.
Yeah.
My accounts. Now what? I don't care. So now I might as well go ahead and switch over everything. Yeah, I'll switch over everything to apps. Well, it doesn't fix it so much as I might as well move over whatever
they
I was going to
lose. Fix it because you don't care anymore. About.
Yeah, I don't care. Whatever it was I was going to lose, I don't care anymore. So I'll just move it over.
There is some good stuff in here, actually.
Mine is always filled with good stuff, so.
I think the format is a little bit of a problem. Here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going nutty, buddy.
7 seconds, 6 seconds.
Fluffer nutter.
4 seconds, 3 seconds. Power off. Here it goes. Into inland.
We're off to inland. Never, never land.
Did we talk about Fi opening up, by the way? Or were waiting?
Yeah, we didn't, which is great. If you've been waiting because you thought you needed an invite, we talked off the air. But you can now buy a Nexus phone and get Fi with it. In fact, you'll get a discount on a Nexus 5X, which I think Fi is. You're a Fi user?
I'm not.
You're
because
not.
My phone is on the corporate plan. So
I have been getting my 6P is on Fi. My 6 was before that. It's the best deal in cell service. You pay $20 for unlimited voice and text in the U.S., and then $10 a gigabyte, and it's sliced pretty thin, so or fractional usage is also counted. And my bill never goes over $30 because mostly I'm on Wi-Fi. It also does a great job of seamlessly handing off calls in call from Sprint to T-Mobile to Wi-Fi, whichever's better. And I mentioned a couple of weeks ago the Signal Spy program that lets you know what carrier you're on. And one of the things that's interesting is T-Mobile. I was always on T-Mobile in Petaluma until Sprint got better. Then suddenly I'm on Sprint a lot more here. So I think that that system really works for them. And, of course, overseas it's going to work too because both Sprint and T-Mobile offer unlimited data and texting overseas, and you'll get that benefit as well.
You didn't find that I mean, it must be doing constant polling in the background of those networks. You didn't find that your battery wore out your battery?
Huh. No. I would like battery life to be a little bit better on the 6P.
Sure.
But no, I don't think that was part of the problem. Fi is a really, I highly recommend it if you're looking for kind of a no-nonsense carrier. It's really ironic that the MVNOs, which this is, Ting is one of our old sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
Straight Talk, all of those networks are MVNOs. They resell.
Virgin.
Well, Virgin's owned by Sprint now, so I don't know if it's an MVNO as much as just an off-brand version of Sprint.
But in almost every case, they do a better job than the carriers are reselling. The experience on Ting and Google Fi is so much better than the experience with Sprint directly or T-Mobile directly.
Now anybody funny. In the U.S. can sign up for it. I wonder if they'll go international with this.
Yeah. Fi is great. Highly recommend it. I've been very happy with it. And what a deal. I have four different carriers. So I have experience with everything. I finally got rid of Verizon. I just couldn't take it anymore. Mostly because of you, Jeff. In protest of Jeff's poor treatment. So you gave up Verizon. Who did you replace them with?
Oh no, I was long off Verizon. I've been on AT&T, but I had devices on Verizon. My wife's tablet was on Verizon. Some other things were on Verizon, and I had a MiFi, and I got hacked. So people were using it to add phones that just didn't exist to an account. Yeah, so I had to go around and around. And I went through like four times. I had to recancel things. They were trying to bill me. I finally had it. I tweeted about it, so it went up to those nice ladies in corporate who have to deal with the jerks. And I said, listen, all I want is to go away. All you want is for me to go away. That's a divorce, right? So please, please,
please.
So they did it. They took me off entirely. Everything's okay. But I'm gone. I'm free. And then what happens? 2 weeks later, Verizon announces they're testing 5G in my town.
Oh, no.
I want it.
Oh, no.
So I'm almost tempted to email the nice ladies and say, if you can want to try and have us make up, if you want to kiss and make up here, can I have 5G?
Yeah, wow, that would be one of the first places in the country. That's very early.
It is very early. So I live in the what is the former headquarters of AT&T, and then has a huge Verizon facility and Verizon wireless facility within a mile of my house, and the old NOC is about 4 miles from my house. So this was. I mean, there's got to be fiber all over this place. So I want the five. But now, have I been too mean to them? Do I regret my ways?
Let's see. Well, we didn't solve Google Plus at all.
No, we didn't.
It was worth a try. We haven't fixed Twitter either. We really got to get to work here. We're not doing our job. Google had 75 million takedown requests last month. That's a 30,000% increase over the same time in 2012. This is, of course, DMCA, not right to be forgotten. I'm sure that number's going up too. 75 million DMCA requests. That's 100,000 links an hour. How do you even do that? Torrent Freak says partly this is because the amount of pirated content has increased on the internet, but also because the MPAA, RIAA, and other copyright holders are using algorithms that spot pirated content quickly. My friend, a guy I worked with in Toronto, he calls himself the blind gamer. Let me see if I can find the image he posted. He got the sweetest image from YouTube. A takedown notice from you. Well, it wasn't exactly a takedown notice. It was saying, you know, the Universal Music Group has said that you're using their music in this video. And so I hope you don't mind. but they've turned on monetization and they're taking the money. I hope that's okay. If this is wrong, please let us know.
That was from YouTube?
Yeah, it was really, it was like super sweet.
Yeah, I got one of those too. I was surprised. I did a little video of Fallout 4 and I put Radioactive to the trailer for Fallout 4. And everybody on Reddit hated it, obviously. But I felt the wrath of Reddit, but my kids liked it. They said, "Dad, that's awesome." So I was happy. But yeah, I got a monetization notice and it was kind of nice. It was like
we're so sorry, but
yeah, just letting you know that.
Well, you know, it can be civilized.
Yeah.
It can be a mutual benefit.
And that's the way it should be. It's just gotten way too out of control, right? And too easy. There should be some sort of, process you go through when this happens. It's just way too easy for someone. And you've, if you've been, you know, spending any time on Reddit lately or any of the social media networks, you'll see that people are getting really mad because their content. This one guy I saw just recently got his video taken down, and for absolutely no reason. He was outside in his front yard videotaping himself.
What?
And he got his video he got a takedown notice. He's like, there's nothing here. It's my front yard and me. What can you claim? So I really feel bad for content producers.
Well, it's done automatically, right? It's happened to us, too. And mm-hmm. we've always appealed it and saying, no, we're a news operation. That's fair use. And they've always backed down. And I think then at some point after a while, they flipped a switch that we because it's kind of hardly happens ever anymore. It's right. very rare.
So they got an algorithm that finally kicked in.
Oh, these areas are news. Okay. Don't bother.
Right, right.
So they're trying to do it right. The notices are not accusatory or mean.
Mm-hmm.
They're sympathetic, which is interesting. And then they're trying to make it better if there's by mistake.
I'm wondering if this is a ripe business opportunity, though, for the right person. Come up with the next YouTube.
No.
I wonder if there was a viable alternative, I wonder if people would say, see ya. I'm going someplace else where I don't get bugged as much.
That's what Facebook tried to do, right?
And yeah.
I don't know if that's how that's working.
I like Vimeo, but they don't have the...
I love Vimeo.
Yeah.
Never really took off.
Never really took off. It's still out there, and I love
going
to
it. I use it whenever I can.
Yeah, people still use it.
Although it's owned by Hollywood. It's owned by ICM.
So I didn't know that.
Yeah, by the big talent agency. I think it's ICM. Google has extended the right to be forgotten to everywhere.
Well, almost everywhere. It's wildly complicated. So the EU and various countries in Europe were after Google because Google, they thought cynically, just said, if you're taking down a right to be forgotten in Spain, we'll block it, the link in Spain. Well, no, it should be blocked worldwide. Well, no, said Google quite properly. We're not doing that. So then it's a complicated formula where I can't remember the exact formula. But if you try to get to it in Spain, you won't get to Spain. If you try to get to it from a Google browser in the EU, you won't get to it. But if you get to it from a non-EU browser in, let's say, the United States, you will still get the link because they won't block the rest of the world. So if you're a European customer in Europe, it's blocked. And if you're a European customer in that country, it's blocked. And if you're a European customer outside that country, you're using a European browser, I think it gets blocked. But if you're using a non-European browser, it doesn't. Or you can just use a friggin' VPN and ignore it all and act like you're American, where we have a friggin' First Amendment and believe in free speech and not trying to rewrite history.
It is complicated.
The reason I'm going to be in trouble for next week is because I got invited to go to CeBIT in Germany.
Oh, fun, in Hamburg.
It will be in Hanover.
Hanover, that's right.
Hanover, as they say. Pardon me. And I'll be doing a keynote at CeBIT itself. But before that, I'll be on an EU/EC, two panels there on the same stage afterwards with Günther Oettinger, the vice president of the European Council, who's the one who's threatening to bring the right to be forgotten to all of Europe. So it's still very much a hot issue there. And I'll come over and I'll finger wag like the obnoxious American. it's just worth noting that that's there and I'm going to cause trouble next week.
Good. But we'll miss you.
I will be missed.
Yes. We're going to now have to look far and wide for a replacement. However, the week following, I'm hoping I'll be in New York.
I have good news.
Yes.
George Castorani, who's the head of our all of our studio operations and all that, is a wonderful guy. He came back excitedly and said, we're on.
Yay!
So I presume we will get details later, but I presume what we're doing is we're basically doing the three of us. We hope Gina's there.
Yep.
Live before our cameras.
Yep.
Switch it in New York and just feed it to Petaluma.
Yep. Cool. Yep. And we'll apply lower thirds locally. I think we have to do that. We were talking about that yesterday, right, Jason Klanthas?
We can figure that out.
What?
We apply our local thirds here, lower thirds here.
Oh, you'll do it back there?
Yeah. It's a little tricky because you're switching it. So
right.
Jason's going to have to be really quick on it.
I mean, Jeff just said they could do it.
We could maybe do it.
No, they don't have our assets.
Oh, gotcha.
I mean, we could try, but it seems complicated. I don't know what kind of switcher they have. I don't know what their asset formats need to be.
Yeah.
I think what we'll do is for the live feed.
We won't do lower thirds for live, and we'll apply them after the fact.
We'll just do it like this for the lower third.
There you
for
go.
For live. And then we'll drop in the names as they need.
Yeah, we'll fix that.
Yeah, so
let's contact some New Yorkers. You must know somebody who lives in New York. to see if there's anybody else wants to be on the show. Certainly Sarah Bartlett could be on the show, but your dean.
But
Jay Rosen, if he wants to come over. Emily Bell. I'd love to see if we can get Baratunde. I'll ask Baratunde if he wants to come over. He works on the Daily Show now.
To start with Baratunde, it'd be great to have Baratunde.
It's hard to get Baratunde. It's hard to get him. But since we're in his neighborhood.
We don't have 30 cameras like you.
But. Well, we can huddle together. We'll even share mics. Three is plenty.
We should have mics. Yeah,
three is plenty.
Yeah, so we'll have, and there'll be actual operators. Which
Will be
right?
Fancy schmancy.
Right, that's what we'll need, right?
We'll need operators.
But we've got really good people.
Yay, I'm very pleased. So that will be on the 23rd, March 23rd, a special New York edition of This Week in Google. Now, you don't have room for an audience in there. You probably have security issues, right? People can't just wander in.
If you have like five friends, that's easy.
Oh yeah, well I'm going to bring my wife,
yes,
and son. But no. So we won't do
Jake might be home.
I'd love to see Jake, but we won't do a studio audience. Just so
yeah, so we're not unless we did it in the newsroom, and that's too much effort. We're
studio,
controlled studio.
Yeah.
Our set is not designed yet.
Students will want to watch, and our new producer will want to watch.
Yes.
And the entire cast of Hamilton will be there.
Yes. Performing. So this is good news. Yeah. Thank you, George, exciting. If you're watching.
Thank you, George. Hey, that's great. The 23rd. All right, let's take a break. Come back with more Google and Facebook. There's some Facebook news. Big hack. But don't worry, it's been fixed. Coming up, but first a word from Gazelle. Maybe now you listen to me about selling that old phone and getting yourself maybe one of them nice new Google Fi phones. Or perhaps you're excited about the new Apple phone, which is supposedly coming out in a couple of weeks. Gazelle's the place to get a quote today on your old phone. Reason is, no consumer electronics device is going up in value. Do not delay. You want to upgrade. Then you better get a quote today. And the nice thing is every quote on Gazelle is guaranteed for 30 days. So you could get the quote now and decide later whether you want to actually take advantage of it. You're not locked in, just they are. Gazelle, top dollar for lots of different used phones, tablets, computers, monitors. And then if you're wondering, well, what happens to the stuff Gazelle buys? Well, some of it gets recycled and some of it gets sold, and the very best stuff gets sold on Gazelle. It is not just a place to trade in your old device for cash, but you can also buy a certified pre-owned one or do both. Gazelle offers the best iPhones, the 6S, the 6S Plus, iPads, and even Samsung Galaxy phones to choose from. Everything Gazelle sells you is fully inspected, backed by a 30-day return policy, sold without carrier contract, although they do work. Of course, they have devices on all of the major carriers, AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, and Sprint. Go to gazelle.com. Take a look at the stuff they're buying. Great for a replacement phone, for a kid, you know. And by the way, they do financing now. All devices, you can get financing from a firm, and you do that in the checkout. You just provide the basic information, and they'll approve you instantly. You can pay it off in 3, 6, or 12 months with easy payments through bank transfer, check, or debit card. Just select financing with a firm as you check out. They also offer 12-month warranties for cell phones and iPads. Those are powered by Assurance Solutions that cover water damage and cracked screens and hardware defects and more. Help is available 24/7 to process claims and return your device ASAP. And, of course, anytime you buy a certified pre-owned device at Gazelle, besides the 30-point checkup, there's a 30-day return policy. So you're never on the hook. You're going to love Gazelle. Don't miss out on getting the best value on certified pre-owned devices and selling your old device. Pay it forward. Pass it along to somebody who really can give it a good home. Gazelle. Give new life to used electronics. Trade it in for cash or buy certified pre-owned devices at gazelle.com. Today. A little bit of a flaw, not a huge flaw, a little bit of a flaw in the old Facebook. Some guy figured out how he could hack into any Facebook profile. Steve Gibson talked a little bit about this on Security Now yesterday. The good news is the hacker, instead of passing it out to all his bad guy friends, alerted Facebook. In fact, they paid him a $15,000 bug bounty, and Facebook has fixed it. Anand Prakash is a security engineer from India. He had a great blog post titled, How I Could Have Hacked Your Facebook Account and All the Facebook Accounts. Turns out, and Steve was really dismissive of this. When you do a password reset on Facebook, they text you a code, a six-digit code, and then they let you keep entering that code 10 to 12 times. Steve thought that was a bad idea. He said, if you just got the phone, but the code texted to you, if you can't do it in three times, you should have to do it again.
Agreed.
However, it's six digits. That means there's a million combinations. Nobody's going to guess it 12 times. But if you go on to beta.facebook.com or mbasic.beta.facebook.com, that rate limiting is turned off or was turned off. So you could guess as many times as you want as fast as you could until you got it. Now, admittedly, that's still a million codes or, you know, on average, half a million codes. But you can use software to do it. And he even made a video of him doing it on his own account. And he did get in. He brute forced his own account. So he did notify Facebook and they were able to patch it so it won't work anymore. In fact, he must have been really happy when he got this message on March 2nd. Hi, Anand. After reviewing the issue you reported, we decided to award you a bounty of $15,000. Nice job. A lot more hackers be working on Facebook bugs. That's a good payday.
Yeah, it is.
But everybody does it. Google does that. Everybody does that now. And that's the way to get people banging on your site. Instant Articles is going to be open to everybody soon, right?
Which I think is really important.
Yeah.
Because it means not only can we all create content there, it also means we can all get revenue there. I mean, you know, maybe enough to buy a cup of coffee to add to the cup of coffee you get from Google Ads. But I've been arguing to publishers right and left, they should consider starting entire new media properties on Facebook.
And even before they open it up wide, if you have a WordPress blog, you can do it right now.
Right.
Oh, that's already open. Oh,
yeah.
I thought it was still going to be April for that.
Well, I'm sorry, April 12th.
Okay.
That's for everybody. But if you have even a tiny WordPress blog, you can do that now. Soon. It's going to be a plugin. Now, remember, there's an AMP plugin as well. So Automattic, the folks who do WordPress, it's really right on both of these options.
So they have a plugin for AMP and they have a plugin for this now, which is a big
presumably deal. You'd turn them both on. In fact, Automattic's making the plugin open source, so others can work on it and make it better. WordPress users that use the standard WordPress templates will be able to activate the plugin immediately to create instant articles. If you've customized it heavily, you may need to work on the plugin a little bit to support the extra features. But that's one of the reasons they open sourced it. That is good. So I have changed my tune a little bit on AMP after, you know, thinking more and more about it.
You know, it's funny. I've been thinking it's actually bad.
Here's the thing that I've learned since our debates is that an AMPed page still shows up as regular markup, right? So it's not incompatible with any browser. If a browser doesn't understand the AMP commands, the JavaScript and so forth, it'll just render the page. So it isn't, in that sense, it's not exclusive. It's not
one thing I learned today.
Yeah. I'm still not crazy about the carousel. In the search
well,
results.
Yeah, that's and I'm told today I didn't realize this. I was told, and I haven't confirmed this yet, but somebody at a paper who should know this said that the blue links, the carousel goes to AMP content, but blue links in search don't. So if the carousel is the only way you go to AMP,
oh, that's weird.
I don't know if that's true or not, but it should be detected because if you use Nuzzle, Jonathan Nuzzle, then it can go to AMP content if it senses that AMP content exists. Twitter, I believe, is going to implement that as well. Why wouldn't Google? I don't know. Google, tell me if I'm wrong here. This was one of your newspaper players that said there's still debate about the behavior of the blue links. And I thought, whoa, that's weird.
Huh.
I don't know.
So let me do a search for Trump. I think there's probably a few stories about him.
Yeah.
You know, I realized that the media is really they're giving him so much free advertising because he's so good for ratings.
Yep.
That it's really the media that's made Trump.
Yeah, Leslie Moonves from CBS has been talking about how great this is. But it's just cynical.
It's great. What could be wrong? Okay, so I've done a search for Trump, and then I have this the carousel, and so we know this is all amped content. It even says so on here. But you're saying, all right, let me find one. Here's
it's fast.
Yeah, it's nice. Okay, BBC. I'm just going to try to find. By the way, it also does a carousel just for Twitter. And, you know, you don't get to the search results.
Well, they usually have a couple links above the...
Yeah, the one two link... Okay, here's two links. Sports figures endorse Donald Trump and Fox News poll. And then there's the carousel. And then there's one link, which is Trump's page. But here's the interesting thing. Yeah.
So the link above for me, what does it say? The first one for me under Trump is a wired link.
Oh.
You don't have that? No.
No.
You just search for Trump? Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, but I'm on my account. I mean, maybe there's, you know.
Because I saw the same link in the carousel that I saw above.
Okay, well, then that's the question is if you hit the link above.
I can't tell now because I already
cached. Is it amped? Oh.
So you
don't get the lightning bolt?
I don't see that at all. I don't see the lightning, whatever.
You don't?
Oh, yeah. So Obama.
So fast. That's why. Yeah. It's so fast. It's a blink of an eye.
So, yeah. So there's a AOL. I don't know.
You know what? I feel like all of the, and this is part of what we're complaining about. All the amped content is already in the carousel. Here's one from New York Times. So I should see a lightning bolt if I hit this. This is the blue link that you were talking about. Is it going to go to the amped content? Now, so I'm, by the way, also not using Chrome, but in theory, that shouldn't make any difference, should it? Yeah, that's definitely.
Oh,
not.
Yeah, it does make a difference.
Oh, it does?
Oh, really?
I think so.
Well, I know. So let's go to Chrome. I'm using the Samsung browser for reasons I don't fully understand. No, you know why I'm using the. It's because it's the fastest browser on Samsung devices.
I just went to a blue link for the New York Daily News, and it loaded. I mean, it wasn't. Well,
let me try it here, New York Times, because the Times is amped.
Times is all amped. Guardian is, I think, 100% amped. Washington Post is 100% amped.
I'm on Chrome. I didn't see a lightning bolt. I don't know if that's amped. How can you tell? That's the part of the problem. The URL should say amp in it, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm not even sure. I think it cleans that out. I'm not sure. So, by the way, I am on...
I don't know.
Oh, there it is.
Let's see it.
There's the app drawer.
Nougat.
Looks exactly like it.
There's an app drawer.
If you pull down the, you can't see very well, but there's that simple tray, and then you pull down farther.
Oh, yeah. That's very nice.
That is nice. I'm constantly double swiping, whatever, to get to those
it's speedy.
Supposedly quick. Settings.
It's even worse on the Samsung now because Samsung has changed the behavior. Just as they've changed the home row buttons, they've flip-flopped those.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so that back is on the right and recent is on the left.
Why did they do that?
Why? Don't do that.
That's crazy.
I know. But then watch, when I pull down, now right when you pull down again, you're going to get the settings, right?
Right.
No. Not only do I not get the settings, I get edit the quick things. I lose the settings gear.
Right. That's weird.
So now I have to go back up to get the settings gear, and then I have to tap the settings gear.
Why didn't you just leave it there?
What's wrong with you?
It used to be if you did a two-finger pull-down, it took you straight into the...
Really?
Yeah.
No, see, it takes you straight into the full quick.
Yeah, but you still don't have your settings button.
But you bypassed your notification.
I bypassed everything.
Yeah.
I guess that's good. I don't know.
My bypass settings is... Wait a minute. Oh, wait a minute. I saw them briefly flash. Wait a minute. Let's... So if you do it a little bit... And then it goes away.
Right.
That's just a tease. See, there's the gear, but it's just a tease because if I let go... Whoop! Peek-a-boo!
Maybe there's an option for that or something. Keep the...
There probably settings. Is. There's a lot of Samsung. Yeah.
So when the drawer's fully open, the gear is gone.
Yeah, all I can do is edit my quick launch settings or press the arrow and I get the gear back.
So do you have any idea how I do the multiple...
Yes. What do we read? We read it.
Did we read it?
Yes. You have to go into...
We open up a few apps here.
The app window. Starbucks. We read it. I can't remember.
You have to pull up the multi-drawer.
Yeah, the multi-drawer. Is that recents? What's the multi-drawer?
You know, where you have multiple apps open. The
recents.
The thing on the lower right. The recents, yeah.
The stack.
They call that the multi-drawer?
The stack, whatever.
It's recent apps. All right, then
what? Recent apps.
Then what?
Yeah.
Now, pick one bar and drag it somewhere. I don't know.
Oh, okay. Yep, there I got it. So there I got, right?
Yeah. On the and top then the other Facebook. One you can do you something else with.
Yeah.
On the top of his Facebook.
See, I think on the Pixel, on the Chrome, Pixel C.
Yeah, and I do the same thing with another one to the lower half.
So.
Yeah. And, oh, that's going to be nice on the C. Nice.
Yeah. I'm never ahead. I'm never in the vanguard.
You're in the vanguard. So you are a leader. Follow that man, the one with all the arrows in his back. Nice job,
no,
Jeff.
Hold on, I'm not. Yeah, now it's not letting me drag the other one. I guess I just go back. Oh, I see.
Just tap the second one.
Oh, now the bottom, that little thing, now is like a little hamburger. It's got two.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Ah, it's a little hamburger.
So I tap that.
It's a two-line hamburger. It's all bun.
Open something there.
The all-bun multi-drawer.
Now I want to go play Burger Time.
So
I want to go to In-N-Out.
Multi-pass.
Multi-pass.
This is a phone at war with itself. So Facebook on the top, Google Plus on the bottom.
Oh, that's a social network nightmare. Mélange.
App may not work in split screen, it tells me.
But they're still trying to do it.
Otherwise, is that the story? Oh, there's a funny story. Funny. I'm sorry. I shouldn't laugh. I should not laugh at this story. West Virginia lawmakers signed a new law allowing the sale of unpasteurized milk, raw milk. They all opened it up and had a drink, and then they got sick. I shouldn't laugh. The poor guys are sick. But. Anyway, so yeah. So there's
that Facebook. It's terrible.
It is awful, isn't it? There's Facebook and Google Plus on one screen on a Nexus phone.
Unintended consequences.
I know, it is. It's just, I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh. That's why I said my post. I shouldn't laugh. I know I shouldn't laugh.
By the way, Vince360 tells me in the chat room, the three lines is a hamburger, two lines is called a grilled cheese. That's not right.
I got that.
It's got the grilled cheese.
So then how do I turn this, how do I stop this?
Now you're asking too much.
Close one of the windows, right?
No, your recent screens appear here. Yeah, I know that. How do I
double tap the top of the Facebook? Maybe it's always about the double tap.
Now we have to send
press the home button,
the Twit app back into testing.
Try pressing the home button.
No, I just hold. I hold the grilled cheese. I'm using that now.
I like it. Hold the grilled cheese. It takes you back.
Oh, and all you do is if you hold the
title bar.
Red loaf.
You mean the square thing? The recents?
The grilled cheese, yes.
Oh, it goes back to grilled cheese. Nice.
Live demo.
Sounds like Minecraft.
Good job, Jeff. My live demos never work.
Amazon error.
Amazon doesn't like it.
I could be happy with some of these new... This is nice. This is so cool to be in the vanguard.
Are you happy that Verizon Wireless has to pay a $1.35 million fine...
No, Leo, now that I want to try out five, I think Verizon's a wonderful company, and I would be very happy to work with them and see the wonderful things they are working on.
We're not easily influenced. No. We can't be bribed.
Not at all.
This was, you remember, in fact, really, this was a good reason to switch off of Verizon. They were doing a super cookie. They were doing a carrier cookie and that would not, you couldn't do anything about, that would identify you, use your... identifier to websites, and we were selling this valuable information. It inserted unique tracking codes into your traffic for advertising purposes. The FCC said Verizon failed to disclose the practice from late 2012 until 2014, violating a regulation on internet transparency. So under the agreement, consumers must opt in to allow their information to be shared outside of Verizon Wireless and have the right to opt out. That's something new. Until March of last year, you couldn't opt out of the super cookies. But I have to point out, as our friend Steve Gibson did yesterday on Security Now, that a $1.35 million fine to Verizon is like cigarette money.
That's a penny a user.
Right? They certainly made far more than that on this. And in fact, Steve said, if you said to Verizon, look, you can do this, but you have to pay us $1.35 million every year, they'd gladly say, good we'll deal. We'll take it.
Mm-hmm. Who did they pay that to? I can't find it.
The FCC.
The FCC was the plaintiff?
Yeah. Well, it's a fine. I don't know who the fine goes to. Mm. Not to us. To the government. And a three-year consent decree in which they'll be watched carefully.
I mean, they're lucky that wasn't a class action.
Nothing. Stuff, right? Nothing.
You got 100 million users and...
I am so glad that Verizon is now doing the right thing.
Yes, indeed.
I'm sure that will make their 5G service very, very good. I can't wait until I get a chance to try that. I am not being held hostage right now. I am not a prisoner, even though my lower third is flashing. Is that the fake me?
I'm just reading about this San Francisco House of Latitude, a secret society in San Francisco.
I couldn't figure that out to save my soul.
Yeah, you know what? This is I've
secret society.
This is just a way to get your money.
Yeah, I think so.
Shopping subscriptions have exploded thanks to social media, says Business Insider. U.S. Dollar Shave Club, Harry's, Birchbox, many of our advertisers. In fact, our next advertiser, NatureBox, companies that deliver goods to you for a monthly fee are growing at an astronomical 2,963% year over year. Wow. Wow. And the reason is, I think, not just Twitter and Pinterest, but Twit. I'm going to take credit for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And while you're at it, you can subscribe to a mattress.
Yeah. This is that's kind of interesting. Social is driving much bigger increases in retail traffic than any other online channel. Social media increased its share of e-commerce referrals 200% from 2014 to 2015. For retailers to maintain these gains, they need to pay special attention to mobile, where social engagement with retail content is still kind of weak. Social media users are 35% less likely to share a brand's or retailer's social post on mobile than they are on desktop. Well, it's a lot easier to retweet and reshare on desktop, isn't it? Facebook is the dominant platform in this. It accounts for 50% of all social referrals, 64% of all social revenue. Pinterest, also big, 16%. Well, given its size, that's actually, you know, per capita, that's probably much higher. Instagram doesn't drive significant sales. Where is podcasting in this report? Let me prove to you how effective podcast advertising could be for subscription services. How would you like a nature box coming to you every month full of delicious snacks like garlic plantains? Actually, I'm going to let you, Aaron, choose. I would give you one, Jeff. I'll bring one out to you if you want. Strawberry Greek yogurt pretzels.
I want those.
Wait a minute. There's more.
Oh, okay.
Salt and pepper. I know. You know what? Sarah Lane was such a fan of these that when the Nature Boxes, we order 4 or 5 a month, came, she would take all of them.
Oh, yeah.
There wouldn't be any the next day.
She's so sneaky.
They're so good. These are, they have hundreds of snacks in a whole variety of flavors, sweet, savory, spicy. You can of course say I want vegan or gluten conscious. There's never any high fructose corn syrup or artificial flavors, no trans fats, artificial colors.
Really
it's
good.
Just good stuff.
Really good.
Watermelon mini stars. Give these to your kids. What's in this? I'll tell you what's in this. Concentrated apple puree, concentrated apple juice, natural flavor pectin, black carrot juice, that's the color, and citrus fiber for chewiness. Nothing bad's in here. No red dye number 3 or anything. They don't even add sugar on these. So you say you want the Greek yogurt?
Oh, yeah.
Here's the deal. You're going to get 50% off your first box when you go to naturebox.com/twit right now. Healthy, smart. Don't go buy a candy bar or eat that, you know, leftover French fries. Go to Nature Box. NatureBox.com/twit. We love these. These are this is our employee retention program in a nutshell.
These are so good.
I know.
Oh my goodness.
I know. Mm-hmm. Would you ever leave a company? I think Sarah must have been stocking up because she knew she was going. and she took all of them so that she wouldn't have to worry about that. NatureBox.com/twit. But you know what? What's great? It's fun because I don't know if you know this. We separated the agency part, the ad sales, out from Twit. So Twit is just a content company, and then Lisa's running an agency, artisanal. Yes, because that way there's a clear dividing line. It's just a separate business. But it's also given her, and by the way, she's going to other podcasts and saying, you know, the formula we invented here, we don't do it like anybody else does. You know, we do it's really a very different relationship with our audience and with the advertisers. We're very careful about the advertisers. But what's great, what's fun is all the new startups, all the new businesses that come to us, because this is an opportunity for them to reach an audience, a sophisticated audience that can really help them grow very quickly.
Yep.
It's kind of cool. I think we could start to wrap things up because we got some fun stuff that you brought. But before I do, Aaron Newcomb, is there any stories, Jeff, that we left out or Aaron?
No, I think I would recommend for future reading Danny Hillis' piece on From the Enlightenment to the Entanglement.
I love Danny Hillis. What did he?
He's great.
So he's writing
arguing that the Enlightenment was about us learning the laws of the universe so we could then figure out how to understand what it was. And in the Entanglement, we're entangled with technology now where we're creating new worlds and new things. And it's just one of those Danny Hillis moments. It's not going to work in 20 seconds on the show. But for the rundown, folks, take a look at that. It's on his
Jod's MIT.
I thought you did.
I feel like I have, and I should if I haven't. He's involved with the Clock of the Long Now Foundation and really smart fellow. Card.
I like Long Now.
What is he doing?
Oh, I should know that because I think a friend of mine is working with him on something.
Let me just Google. He was Thinking Machines, of course, was one of the first supercomputer guys. Long Now Foundation does the Clock of the Long Now. Applied Proteomics. Okay, he's too smart, and he's a professor of engineering and medicine at the University of Southern California. He's at USC. He was an Imagineer. I don't know if he's still an Imagineer, but a very smart guy. Studied under Marvin Minsky and Claude Shannon. That's a good start. Good, I will read that. Yeah. I will read that.
I thought I'd just give it a little plug over.
Yeah, he's kind of a legend. Oh, he left Disney way back when, in 2000. And that's when they founded another company called Applied Minds. Semantic data storage infrastructure for the internet.
Wow.
Deep stuff.
Yeah. Some people are so smart that you just go, okay, I'll never understand a thing you do, but I'm sure it's neat. All right. You know what? There's always more to talk about. Next week, Jeff will not be here. 2 weeks, though, I will go into Jeffland.
Yay.
We'll do the show from the City University of New York. Gina is scheduled to join us. I'm sure we can get her to come over the bridge. And that'll be a lot of fun. I can't wait for that.
Jason, would you warn her so she needs a babysitter or anything?
Yeah, well, of course we're going to warn her.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
She doesn't need a babysitter.
So wonderful.
She should bring, be thrilled if she'd bring her family.
There you go.
Because I have never met her baby.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So don't babysit. Forget that. Bring the kids.
Have you met her wife?
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure I have. Have I?
I've not.
Maybe not.
No, I'm not.
Maybe not. So bring the fam.
We got Matt Cutts next week, and we'll get another to fill.
Nice. Oh,
good.
I'm sorry, I missed Matt. Yeah. I'm rushing in. I might make it to a hotel room, but don't count on me.
No. But if you showed up, no one would be upset.
Yes, we'll figure it out.
Just appeared.
I'll leave the Skype machine warm for you.
Thanks. Well, no, it'll be if I'm in Germany, it'll be the. I guess I could. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Your Pixel C suddenly gets more interesting, doesn't it?
It does. I can do Skype on the Pixel C.
Uh-huh,
yeah.
Uh-huh. Scooter X is going to give me my tool of the week. So why don't I start? You can do a number, Jeff, and then we'll leave plenty of room for Aaron Newcomb and his, because he's brought a couple of little projects along with him. This isn't running, which is too bad. Scooter X passed along Chrome Experiments. You all know, we've talked about it before, chromeexperiments.com. This is Google's place where amazing things you can do with Chrome and WebGL. And like this is dominoes. So if you want, you can, I guess, place dominoes on here. Let's look at a gallery of dominoes. And oh, you know what? This is nice because if you... Ooh. You've ever wanted to knock over dominoes but not spend the time to set them up? Just tap that. Oh.
Went the wrong way.
Oh, I tipped it the wrong way. Maybe if I tip. Oh, there it goes. I got one of them.
There you go.
Oh, that is cool. This is failing in all sorts of unusual ways.
Oh, it's going away now. It's very nice.
Oh, endless fun. Endless amusement. Will we get them all, though? No, I think there's going to be a little bit left over. Wow, that's cool. But Scooter X, can you get the music one working? This is their newest, and it's not working. The Chrome Music Lab. Music is for everyone. Play with these simple experiments to explore how music works. Does it just take a long time to load? Or is it, because I'm just not getting anything. Is it, oh, I know what it is. Let's turn off my ad blocker.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I'm a bad man.
Busted.
I'm a bad man. The ad blocker was blocking it. So here's a little monkey drum. Little monkey drum loading up here.
Puppy, monkey, baby.
See how quickly we forget?
Yeah, puppy, monkey, it? Baby.
Baby, monkey, butt.
Puppy, monkey, baby.
Puppy, monkey, baby. What was an ad for? Quick.
Mountain Dew.
Oh, you're too good.
I drink it.
It's their Kickstart drink. They've already got you.
These ads don't have any effect on me.
Not at all.
Where's my Mountain Dew?
I drink it. I don't know why. I just feel like I should.
I feel the urge. I just feel like I need to wake up in the morning with a puppy monkey baby.
So this is a spectrogram showing us music and how it looks on a spectrogram. I couldn't get the monkey to do anything. Here's chords. Press any key. Whoa. Major? That was a G. Now you see major?
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
This would be great for kids.
Kids would love this. How about some arpeggios? It's funny, you ended up singing church music. I was about to do the Righteous Brothers, so.
That's what they need for those. You know, you go to those conferences and the guy walks around with a little ding-dong thing?
Yeah.
That's what they need.
So this is musiclab.chromeexperiments.com, or just go to Chrome Experiments and you can you can see. This is for Music in Our Schools Month. So these are for kids. They're experiments that let anyone at any age explore how music works.
That's cool.
Collaborations between musicians and coders. Fun stuff.
I'm going
stuff.
To my kids' Music in Our Schools event tonight.
Music is great. And unfortunately, especially in California, but I bet it's true in other states, we just don't fund the schools very well. And the first thing they go are the arts.
Yep.
And I know STEM is important, but boy, so are the arts.
It's STEAM.
STEAM now, because
yep,
you put the STEM. A in the STEM, A.
That's right.
And you get STEAM, and then
that's
it
right.
is arts.
I always try to correct. Anytime I hear STEM, I always try to correct
voice
people.
Or the arts.
What?
It's STEAM.
Important, but voice or the arts.
We made a record.
STEAM. Important, but voice or the arts.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, you know, it's help.
What the what? This is great.
That's cool.
But voice or the arts. It's STEAM. Important, but voice or the arts. It's STEAM.
This is like what I used to do at home with a real record player.
I know. See, kids today don't have those records. Yeah. They don't have tapes. They can't. So, to be or not to be, that is the question.
Gotta be quick.
I can do some scratching. That's cool. That's voice spinner. Anyway, have some fun with that. Jeff, you got a number for us?
So a wonderful Danny Sullivan piece who says that RIP and good riddance to PageRank.
Yeah, tell me what that all means, because I saw that piece.
That bit by bit has kind of been disappearing, but he said that in the coming weeks it will be completely hidden from public view. However, the impact of PageRank, which he thinks is nefarious, but I know it certainly wasn't.
He says it ruined the web.
Ruined the web. Ever gotten a crappy email asking for links? Blame PageRank, says Danny. Ever had garbage comments with link drops? Blame PageRank. Ever had to ferret out the how and why of why you should make use of nofollow attribute on links? Blame PageRank. PageRank, of course, was a little bar that appeared on top of pages that said, this is how
I haven't seen that is in ages, though, right?
Still existed, right? But it motivated everybody. It's the right. Unintended consequences. It motivated everybody to game the system. When everybody says Google should make its algorithm public, this is one tiny example, one data point that Google made public that meant everybody created an industry of SEO around trying to improve your page rank, because it was the one thing that Google did make transparent for a while. A very simple, score. I don't know what the numbers were, like 0 to 7 or 9. I can't remember. It was 0 to 10. So you found out what the page rank. And of course, remember, folks, the page rank was established by the value of the ranks to you and the value of ranks to them. So it was a collective little Jenga tower. Anyway, they were going to just completely make it invisible.
It still exists. It's there, but you won't be able to learn what a page rank is anymore, what your page rank is anymore.
Right. So that was that.
That's sad.
Kinda.
Yeah. As soon as you give a number, remember how much people cared about your Twitter follower number?
Oh, yeah.
As soon as you give a number, everybody says, oh, it gets competitive. So I got to get that number up.
But while we're here, I think I'm going to count 3D as a number. Is this old? I hadn't seen this before. 3D pancake printing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've seen that, absolutely.
Oh, of course, you would have seen it. Yes.
Wait a minute. Can you eat them afterwards?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
You're just printing the batter out with the CNC, a couple axes and...
Pancake Bot. It's on Kickstarter.
Oh, yeah.
You can turn any image into...
How did I not... I've paid for so many Kickstarter campaigns. How did I not buy this? Because no one's got one yet, right?
Yeah.
Well, maybe.
You can make your own.
Getting closer. Yeah, this is another one of those. Someday, we'll get your pancake bot. That's fun.
It is fun.
Yeah. So. Actually, kind of a related story. We talked again about this on Security Now, but some students made a... was it MIT students? They made a inkjet ink and paper that you could use to print circuits, integrated circuits, on this paper.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
But as it turns out that it has another side effect. It can also print conductive fingerprints. It was Michigan State.
It could that's how they did it. Okay.
Yeah.
I saw the headline go by.
Yeah. So the idea originally was to print circuits on conductive paper and so forth. But it turns out because these fingerprint readers, at least on the iPhone 5S and the Samsung Galaxy S6, which they had copies of, because it's capacitive, you could print your fingerprint and put it on the phone and it would work.
Wow.
So a scan, or I guess if you could take a photo of somebody's finger, you could probably figure out a way to print it out. So these are because it's conductive ink. These are fingerprints that actually work. Watch this. He's going to unlock. Oh, my God.
Wow. Yeah, you can get it LAPD forensic style with some clear tape.
Yeah, but the reason it has to be conductive is because these are...
To get the print.
The print. Yeah, you could lift it from a lot of things. Yeah.
You just lift it from anything. Nice. Use a little toner.
Printers. Is there anything they can't do?
Did you see the story about the new HP ink?
No.
Oh, so what it's going to do is basically kind of spray the page with the ink, and it'll only conduct in certain places, so it'll be much faster and better. However, it's a proprietary ink.
Oh, of course it is. That way, you have to buy it from HP. HP's pigment ink for office printers can't be bought for cheap because it's proprietary. Of course, they figured out an ink that they could patent. Well, I won't be buying one of those printers. cartridges, $40 each.
Wow.
That's why I like our sponsor Epson. They don't play those games.
Yep. I since they are the sponsor, I'll say about HP. I refuse HP printers. Trying to set them up is the worst thing in the world.
No, I've never.
I have my Epson printer. I'm very happy with it, and I don't say that because they're a sponsor. I happen to have it.
Yep. So Aaron Newcomb brought in this. Now, if you're a nerd, an old school nerd, you'll recognize a 20-sided dice used for Dungeons and Dragons.
D&D. Yeah, absolutely.
It's a die, not a dice. But this is a little bit of a different kind of a. Why don't you turn it on?
Yeah, let's turn it on first.
Because we didn't want the battery to die because Leo insists on playing with it.
Yes. You have been, too.
I have been. Have so been. It's good you turned the battery
on. Yeah, you've been.
It would have been talking at us the whole time.
Okay, so here's the inside. I don't have
actually,
this. Yeah, you want to show that?
Yeah, can I show the inside?
Yeah, do that first.
So you 3D printed the outside.
Yep, and careful, the magnets will.
Oh, wait a minute. We have a shot for
oh, we
you.
Do
see
have a
that
shot.
Over there?
Oh.
Look at that.
Okay, so
you guys are way good.
Yeah, you guys are really good. So here's the 20-sided die. This was 3D printed. And by the way, there's a tutorial on how to do this on Adafruit. So it's in the rundown.
Okay.
If you want to go check that out. But I'm a cheapskate. So what I did was, instead of buying Adafruit, I love Adafruit, by the way. Nothing against Adafruit.
That's where I got my Raspberry Pis.
But you can also go online. Sometimes you can get stuff from China, for, 10th of the price. So that's what I did. I had some stuff. I had an old accelerometer laying around. I had this sound card thingy laying around that was a couple bucks from China. An old battery that I could use. So I took their design and I changed it, updated it a little bit, and saved myself about $30. So what you do is you turn this thing on.
What?
Did you get that?
Yeah.
Adventurer?
Is that you?
That's not me. These are the Adafruit sounds that I'm using.
Okay.
Hang on. I've got a wire in the way here. There we go.
So it's kind of neat because the magnet holds it together. So it's very easy. Now switch over to, well, we could continue to yours, but use
either way. So roll that thing and see what happens.
I have a microphone.
An 8.
And it is an 8.
Wow.
It's 13.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, so I've got to adjust the timings. The timings aren't quite right. Sometimes if you hold it too still, it's too still, it'll think that it's done rolling. Yeah.
A two.
Yeah. So it's a lot of fun. It uses an accelerometer. So it's a good project for a lot of reasons, right? It teaches you, it uses an Arduino. Uses an accelerometer.
And bring this to your next D&D, and you'll be a superstar.
Yeah. Of course, they won't let you use it because it's not, official weighted die. But it is a lot of fun, and kids really love it. Interesting problem to solve, though, is so I've got this thing connected to my computer, right? And I'm reading the data that's coming across the accelerometer. But the problem is when the die is open, your coordinates aren't going to be right.
Oh. So how do you
it
do
it? It took
that?
Me a while to figure out. I'm like, well, maybe I'll put Bluetooth in and read the coordinates that way. And then I'm like, okay, stupid. You've got all the numbers as sound files already in the thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So what I did was you can flip a switch in the program and it'll read out the coordinates that it lands on instead of reading the number.
Oh, you're brilliant.
Then you can program those back into your Arduino script and it'll actually play the right sound when it lands on the right thing. So I've made some improvements to it. I think this one I will definitely put up on Instructable. I know at the beginning we said I don't do that, but I'm going to do it with this one because I think it's going to be a lot easier for some people to implement this. But if not, you just go to the Adafruit site.
Because they sell all the parts.
They sell all the parts. They make it easy. So just go to their site. You can buy all the parts and make one yourself.
They even sell the 3D printed die?
I don't think so. I think you've got to
print
that. Or you can, there's plenty of places that'll do 3D printing for you. So you can go out to, I think even Adafruit might do it. So you can go out and have somebody 3D print it and just ship it to you.
Now, somebody's very sharp-eyed in the audience and said, is that a Raspberry Pi over there on the table? But no,
it's not.
Okay. I rolled a one. It's absolutely right. It looks like a Raspberry Pi. It's got all the connectors. But I've never seen heat sinks on a Raspberry Pi.
Right. So this is actually brand new. They just started shipping this. This is an Odroid C2. And I've talked about Odroid before, I think, maybe on All About Android and some other things. Odroid is from a company called...
Hard Kernel.
Thank you very much. And they do a couple of things differently. Number one, if you're just going to compare it to a Raspberry Pi 3, right, that was also just recently announced, this one has 2 gig of RAM.
Oh.
It's
a V8.
It has
Cortex A53.
Yep. And it also has
2 gigabytes of RAM is big.
2 gig of RAM versus
gigabit
one.
Ethernet, HDMI.
Yep. And it has a serial UART. It has a built-in infrared, so you can actually, if you want to hook this up as
receiver.
Your player,
so you can use a remote control.
You could use a remote control on it. And it's just a really, really nice device. The other critical thing it has is it has eMMC on the back here.
Flash storage.
For flash storage. And that makes a huge difference. So remember,
that's a lot faster than an SD card.
Right.
SD
and we
card.
Were talking earlier about what I use this for. What I use this for is to run Android. It's very difficult to run Android on a – oh, that's a nice tight shot. Look at that.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to run Android on a Raspberry Pi because the drivers aren't there. So you need 3 things to run Android on one of these SBCs. You need the drivers. You need a lot of RAM because Android likes a lot of RAM. And you need fast storage. And you've got that on this device because here's the
EMMC. That doesn't
EMMC
come with
here.
It. You'd have to buy.
You have to buy this separately. And it's a little more expensive than a Raspberry Pi 3. So this is $40. And then I think this module was like $18 here.
For how much RAM?
For storage, I mean. 8 gig.
8 gigs.
8 gig. And you
so
can get
not
more.
A lot, but
it's not a lot, but it's enough
so
to run
fast.
Android. And it's super fast.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like the experience you get on a tablet or your phone.
Oh, interesting.
And if you don't have that, you're going to start slowing down, especially when you run some of the apps like Chrome and other things.
So think of this as like a little bread box for Android, for
that's right.
Android phone.
Yeah,
devices.
And you can run Linux on it as well. They have images for Linux, so you can do that. But because it's not the Broadcom chip, the Broadcom
it's an
ARM
logic.
Chip, it's, yeah, so you've got all the drivers for Android already, so it's really, really nice. So what I'm doing with this, and this will be another project I'll bring maybe at some point, is I'm building a Pi Top with this. So Pi Top is when you take a laptop, take the stuff out and put a Raspberry Pi inside, right? But I'm going to turn it into an Android Pi Top. So I guess it's an Android top. I don't know what you want to call it. But it's going to have this board on the inside, and I'm doing a lot of work to get the keyboard to work and the mouse, the touchpad to work. I've already got the screen working. So I'm retrofitting an old laptop, and I'm going to turn it into an Android top. I don't know what you want to call that. But that's what I'm going to do.
It's
with
the Odroid C2 from hardkernel.com.
Odroid C2. And they make a lot of other things, too. They make an Odroid Zero, which is not as cheap as the Raspberry Pi Zero, but it's a small board, $25, I think. And you get a lot of horsepower out of it. But it's really small, so you can embed it into your projects a little bit easier. And then they have all sorts of other models, too, if you want to step it up from there. But
so if I wanted to do with my dream, which is to make a Harry Potter-style portraits of our hosts, this Odroid C0 probably be perfect for that.
Yeah, because you could bake that into the back of the frame.
Put it in the back, yeah.
I'd prefer to have pancakes made of this.
All right, so there'll be portraits of all the hosts moving, winking, and then a pancake with Jeff Jarvis's face on it.
Yes.
And you figure out why.
Just make sure you hold the grilled cheese.
Yeah.
Jeff, have a great trip to... Sorry, I rolled a 12. Have a great trip to Hanover. So you say Hanover?
Hanover.
Hanover.
Hanover. That's
Hanover. What is the food of Hanover?
Seebit. I have no idea, but it's fried. Whatever it is, it's fried.
Yeah. Seebit is the big. It's bigger than the CES. It's huge.
It's gigantic. So I go in. I do the panels on Tuesday.
Can you report to us a little bit from Seebit? Do a final report or two?
I could try. So I like a half a day to wander around a gigantic Seebit, and then I do my keynote, and then I go to the airport.
Wow. Jeff wastes no time. He's a busy man.
Yeah, I don't. I get back home.
Maybe, though, we could get a Skype or something. I don't know. Phil, you know what? Yeah. Shoot some stuff on your smartphone.
Okay.
And just send us the video.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jeff.
I have my Fi working.
Yay.
By the way, the notifications are very nice.
I'm going to do my Pixel C tonight. I'm excited.
So when you get a notification, you can act on it at the notification. So they've improved notifications. That's nice. Those are the changes so far.
Jeff Jarvis, cool. City University of New York. We will be back together in 2 weeks at CUNY.
Can't wait.
First show from the CUNY studios. All of us. That'll be great. I can't wait. Thank you, Jeff. Aaron Newcomb, regular around here. We love having him on. He's been on the Screensavers. He's been on Floss. All about Android, and he always brings fun projects, works at NetApp, and, of course, has his own makerspace.
That's right.
where you too can get trigger finger.
You can. Absolutely.
You spent too much time on the drill press.
And we've got the Mini Maker Faire is coming up. I think I mentioned it last time I was on.
Talk about it.
Mini Maker Faire is coming up on April 16th in Benicia. If you're anywhere in the Bay Area and you want to check it out, it's a smaller fair, not like the big one down in San Mateo. A lot of people like that because you actually get to interact with people. It's not crazy. You don't feel like you're – if you're claustrophobic, go to a Mini Maker Faire. You'll really enjoy it. And – I don't know if I mentioned this, but I'm going to anyway. There's a special offer. If you're a Twit fan, you can actually get a discount right now. Nice. If you go buy a ticket and put in the promo code Twit, you'll get 20% off your tickets. So I thought I'd make that available for our great audience because they're awesome.
Very nice of you.
Yeah.
At the Benicia Middle School, April 16th, Saturday,
April 16th.
All day.
Yep.
Thanks to Jason Kleanthis, our esteemed producer. And thanks
always,
to all of you.
Always, Jason. Thank
yes,
you.
Yes, he does a great job. Thanks to you for joining us. We do Twig this week in Google every Wednesday afternoon, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern. Now, remember, our clocks are changing on Sunday, and UTC doesn't move. But since we are moving, we'll still be at 1:30 Pacific and 4:30 Eastern, but we'll be at 20:30 UTC starting next week. So please adjust your brain. Since you can't adjust UTC, adjust your brain. Now, if you do miss the show, of course, audio and video always available on demand at twit.tv/twig and wherever you get your podcasts, including all those great free Twit apps and paid Twit apps on the app stores of every platform, iOS, Android, Windows Phone, Roku, Apple TV. There's five different apps because we didn't run any of them. They're all from our third-party fabulous friends, developers. Thank you. And I'll see you next week on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.